This is Ken Lubin, the host and founder of the Executive Athletes Podcast, and welcome to this week's episode. I want to thank everyone that's been listening, and thank you for the comments and feedback. They're awesome and an incredible help in this journey to making this podcast better and better each episode. Once again, this is unscripted and unedited, as I believe is the best way to get to really know the guest. This week's guest is unique, just like everyone else. Every other guest is really unique as well, but he's got a pretty interesting story, and his name is Bobby O'Donnell, and I'm actually going to read his intro from the back of his book, Running Wild, that he just released. So pretty interesting story. Stay tuned here for a second, and we'll get things rolling. So here we go. After almost losing everything at the finish line of the 2013 Boston Marathon, Bobby O'Donnell, a 19-year-old college student, was left empty and broken. In the aftermath of the bombing, he not only struggled with the trauma of the events, but also found that terrorism had stolen his passion for running. Unable to find healing in his conventional life, O'Donnell embarked on an inspiring and ambitious quest to run a marathon on all seven continents. His search for peace took him everywhere, from dodging penguins in Antarctica to running under the shadow of Mount Everest. Finding new love for his sport and seeing the good of humanity in all corners of the globe, O'Donnell experiences triumphs and unexpected tragedy in this beautifully described journey. A true testament to following your dreams, this adventurous story serves as inspiration for overcoming fear in the midst of overwhelming adversity. So, Bobby, welcome to the show.
Ken, thanks for having me, man. Really appreciate it.
So 2013, the Boston Marathon, actually, I remember that day. I was at a fruit stand in Worcester buying food for dinner when I heard the whole story that went down in Boston. Tell us a little bit about that. And you were about a half mile from the finish line.
Yeah, it's, you know, the Boston Marathon's famous for kind of, you know, for granite or in kind of that marathon running circle, the end of it is those two quick turns. It's right on Hereford, left on Boylston. So I was just about to turn onto Hereford Street when I kind of just heard a really loud bang. And you're in a city and you're running around thousands of people. And, you know, it's just one of those things that you would never expect to happen. I could never imagine myself being, you know, involved in that. And then retrospectively looking back at, you know, the marathon bombing and all the news coverage and everything that's gone since, it's sometimes like hard to believe that you're even there at all, because it is just such a infamous event. But yeah, it was you know, it was probably the worst day of my life. And I think coming back from that is mostly, I realized that even though, you know, you go through the events of that day and you try yourself through it, you know, people have asked me at speaking events, things like that, you know, would you, if you could go back in time and if you could get rid of the Boston Marathon, erase that day for your life, would you do it? And, you know, if you asked me in like the 2 years following the event, you know, I would have done anything for that day if it not happened, and to have continued living the relatively normal life that I was going on. But if that day didn't happen, it wouldn't change my life the way it did, and I wouldn't have had all the incredible experiences that I had after that.
Wow, that's amazing. So you're, like you said, you're a half mile from the end. What was, you know, what was that like? How'd they stop the race? Did you continue? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the police officers kind of came out onto the race course and just said, oh, hold up here for a second, hold up here for a second. And it's one of those things where you don't really, you'd never expect that to happen, especially during a big city marathon, to have the race being stopped. And at that point, you know, you're running for, you know, over 3 hours and you're that close. And the Boston Marathon was really the major motivation for me to even start running at all. I didn't start running until I was 17. So it was just, you know, 2 years after that. And the big goal was to always run Boston and to be kind of that close to this goal, and everyone around you, you know, the Boston Marathon is so iconic and you're that close to the end to suddenly stop. You know, you're a bit confused and, you know, obviously you're going to do what the police officer says regardless. And so, you know, a few people trickle through and then you're kind of hanging around and you're doing, you know, that's just stereotypical stuff that runners do. And you're kind of jogging in place, you're stretching your legs a little bit. And then you're starting to get cold because it's April in Boston and you've been running and you stop. And then, you know, getting agitated. And, you know, I was just trying not to, you know, think about it, like just try to keep myself still excited, you know, to accomplishing this goal. And then you know, the police officers still weren't quite sure. There's so much chaos, you know, just two streets over that, you know, they really weren't sure what was happening either until they said, you know, the race is over. The race is over. And they said an incident, the police officer that we were said, you know, an incident occurred. The race is over and you need to, you know, evacuate to this area. And obviously just a massive shock to your system. But I remember the first thing, you know, aside from that, when I knew something was really wrong, is seeing kind of this group of people running in the opposite direction. So you've been running in one direction for this many hours, and all of a sudden there are people running back towards you, obviously away from the finish line. And it, you know, it was something like you see in a movie. You know, I could never imagine myself, you know, being in a situation like that ever again. And I stopped this one lady, and I said, she's had this, you know, this, I'll never forget how she looked, and just this look of just absolute terror in her eyes. And I said, you know, what's going on? What's happening? And she said, you know, bombs exploded. There's bombs at the finish line. You need to get away. And I said, what? And she said, you know, bombs exploded. They blew up the grandstands. And then at that point, so my whole family came to watch me run the marathon that year. And because my uncle worked for John Hancock, which is one of the premier sponsors of the event, he got them these kind of VIP grandstands. So you know, at that point, you know, I'm 19 years old and I'm in Boston running the marathon. You know, it was supposed to have one of the best days of my life. And then this, you know, lady is telling me that the grandstands blew up. And, you know, at that point, it was, you know, every person that I loved in my life was gone.
Wow. And, you know, and from some of the experts or from reading your, you know, some of the early parts of your book, you were talking about, you had no idea where they were, right? Because they shut down cell phone service. You couldn't get in touch with anyone. That
yeah.
That had to be pretty interesting.
Yeah. So that was kind of one of the big things was, you know, I didn't have a cell phone. So, you know, I just started walking kind of in the direction of all the runners. My mind was just going, you know, a million different directions. And, you know, kind of an interesting thing happened where, you know, when I was writing the book, the first two chapters are about the Boston Marathon 2013 and then the Boston Marathon 2014. And those were the last two chapters in the book that I wrote because they were just the hardest to write. And, you know, and the publisher had said this to me that, you know, can you write more, can you elaborate more here, you know, about the day of the bombing specifically? And, you know, I think my brain just is a protective mechanism. You know, there's so many gaps, you know, in those few hours following the event that, you know, my brain was just trying to protect itself and really just shut down. But I went to a news crew because all the news vans were starting to come in, and I asked one of the guys if I could just borrow a cell phone, and I called my mom, and it was just this automated message that came up that said, you know, the caller that you're going to reach isn't available. And then called my dad, same thing, and called my grandmother, same thing, called, you know, my girlfriend at the time, same thing. And, you know, in my head, you know, I didn't take a step back and think, you know, okay, well, maybe they had shut cell service down because, you know, they're worried about that triggering, you know, secondary devices. It was their phones blew up and they're no longer working. So then at that point, just completely emotionally shut down and just kind of head down, walking through Boston and not knowing what to do.
Wow. That's amazing. That's going to be super scary. Right. And understanding that and where anyone would be, you can't find them. And I have done Boston and it's even without a bombing, it's pretty chaotic at the finish line.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about this journey. So you went through the marathon. It sounds like, you know, and then you decided to set this goal. You lost sort of your passion for running, but then actually got it back and set this goal of running marathons on 7 continents. Tell us how that came about.
Yeah. Obviously. So after, you know, I was really lucky. My family was okay. And the bombs were across the street from the grandstands. But, you know, in the months and, you know, years following that day, I just felt just this, an immense amount of guilt. And, you know, immediately following April 2013, I just felt this responsibility that I needed to make sure my whole family was okay, because they were there because of me. And I just felt, you know, impossibly guilty because of that. So, you know, it wasn't until, you know, a few months or even a year later, especially getting ready for Boston in 2014, that, you know what, you know, I don't think I really want to do this. I don't think I want to come back and run Boston, because, you know, every time I laced my running shoes, I would just get this, you know, flood of memories that would be from that day, and just this really awful, like, gut-wrenching feeling, and, you know, just nightmares, and, you know, just all this terrible stuff, and just very poorly dealt with my mental health. I was running cross country in college at the time, and, you know, didn't, once the autumn came, didn't run the next season, and just tried to, you know, focus all my energy into, you know, feeling guilty, and it was kind of this really terrible thing. And, you know, I talk a lot about where, you know, expectations are a very dangerous thing to have, because I kind of put, you know, all my eggs in one basket and said, you know, what I need to do is have closure on this by finishing Boston in 2014. I just need to get myself back into the city, do the race, and everything will be better. So that's what I did. And, you know, crossed the finish line. And the whole day, you know, it's kind of funny. There was just so much security that year, and, you know, there's such an energy in Boston about, you know, the year after the bombing and taking the city back and Boston strong and all this stuff, and through the race, you know, I was just trying to convince myself that, you know, I was healing and I was getting better. And then it wasn't until, you know, I finally turned onto Boylston Street, and instead of being excited, it was, okay, well, I need to make sure that I'm on the right side of the street, because, you know, when the bombs went off last year, I was the left side. And, you know, and I'm saying to myself, my head as I'm crossing the finish line, my first Boston Marathon, like, you know, these aren't thoughts that I should be having. So, you know, in the summer following that, it was just, you know, I was still getting nightmares and I was still struggling with it. I still didn't enjoy running. And, you know, being, you know, at that time, you know, 20 years old and going through college and working, I was in Paris. Middle school at the time as well. It's just like, it's so much on my plate. And running was always what I would go to. You had a long day, you had a hard day, you just, you know, go for a run and clear your head. And I just didn't have that anymore. It just made it worse. And it was just a pretty devastating thing to have happen. So, yeah, I did like to see some counseling for a little bit, and it didn't help. And then that's almost, you know, the kind of the worst bit, because when you finally admit that something is wrong, it just makes it that much more real. And in terms of mental health, you know, when you go to see a counselor, at that point, you're like, all right, well, you made a big step of realizing that you need help, but then work, you know, it's that worse. So I realized that I needed to just make a massive change in my life. You know, nothing was working. And I had always wanted to travel. And I was, you know, maybe this is kind of the time to do it. Maybe this is my cue to kind of just get out into the world. And I had never left the United States before. I just finished my paramedic. And, you know, at the emergency room that I was working at, there was an advertisement for a medical mission trip in a pretty remote part of Nicaragua. And I was like, you know, the old me, I would have never signed on to that. But I'm just going to do it. This is the first thing I'm going to jump on, and I'm just going to go for it. And I think, you know, everyone gets so comfortable in their lives. And I was so, until the Boston Marathon bombing, you know, I grew up in suburban Massachusetts and middle-class family. And I didn't face adversity in my life ever. And, you know, I had, you know, a great family life. I was doing well in school. I didn't have any financial trouble. And, like, you know, I just never had a reason to try and go do something different and really push myself. So, you know, this is kind of my time to do it. So, you know, went to Nicaragua, and, you know, really just kind of fell in love with just this, you know, romanticized idea of traveling and just meeting different people, and you know, this hostel we were staying at, just really embraced the idea of all these people I was meeting who were just traveling for months and months and months and had been all over the world. And I realized how little that I had seen, and I almost felt like I had been wasting time. So we're in kind of the northwest part of the country, we're on this beach, and I hadn't ran in a few months, and I was just kind of looking out, and I was like, you know what, I could see more of this area that I was really enjoying if I was running instead of walking. I would just cover more ground. So it sounds like, you know, maybe I should just go for it. I'm just going to put on shoes, and whatever happens, happens when I run. So, you know, when I started running, you know, what scared me is that running had been, you know, such a huge part of my life that, you know, I couldn't have ever imagined without it. And then the Boston Marathon bombing happened, and now I'm running for the first time in, you know, 5-6 months. And, you know, it just felt weird. And I never thought that running would physically feel strange to me. And it wasn't. And I kind of doubted myself for the first, you know, half mile, mile into it. I'm like, maybe this is, you know, maybe I shouldn't start running again. Maybe I'm not ready yet. But, you know, you can always make a million excuses to not do something. So I'm just going to push through it. And I had, you know, it's still, I've been really fortunate to run in some cool places, but that was such a defining moment in my life, not just in my running career. Because I enjoyed running, you know, for the first time, and I enjoyed it more than I had before the marathon bombing, because I wasn't running because I was training for a race or because I wanted a medal or to get a time. I was running because I just wanted to, and because I was in such a beautiful place, and it was just kind of this primitive feeling of just getting my heart rate up and sweating and just feeling the wind. And it was just kind of like the most perfect way to kind of get back into it.
That's amazing. That's a great, you know, analogy. And, you know, not running for speed and not having to really focus on anything it's sort of refreshing too. And you can just sort of let yourself go if you're going to go for a mile or 100, right? It's definitely liberated. How did that concept of going running the marathon on each continent come up? You know, was it sort of a slow progression, or was it, hey, I'm going to do this now and this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah, it was just being kind of, you know, goal oriented my whole life. It was, you know, if I was going to do something, I wanted to set task for it. And after that kind of trip, I was like, you know, I have, you know, I had spring break after, because this was in January 2015. It's like, I have spring break, I'll probably work out. And then, you know, once I have the summer off, you know, if I work enough, I'll save enough money and I'll just go traveling for the summer. And one of the big places on my list was always Australia. I'd love to go to Australia, New Zealand, and travel about there. And next, I'm a scuba diver as well. So I kind of went online, and the only race that was going on, because my big thing too, I would get quite stressed before races, and this was like really my first race back. I wanted it to be at the start of my trip, so I wasn't, you know, going, you know, so I did not enjoy all these other places because I was stressed about this race that I would have in a couple weeks time. So I went to Australia in May of 2015, and the only marathon on in the country at that time was this ultra in the Blue Mountains National Park in New South Wales. And I had, you know, never done an ultra before. I'd never done a trail race before. Like my off-road running career, you know, aside from, you know, just cross country races, was, you know, just this run on a beach in a jungle in Nicaragua. And I said, oh, I'm just going to go for it. And this just became like my new mantra. It's like, I'm just going to go for it. Like I'll get there and I'll figure it out. As you know, the months went by and I was planning on going to Australia and getting ready for that. I was like, you know what, if I found this really amazing place to run by chance in Nicaragua, there has to be so many places around the world that I can go do this. And I said, you know, what better goal, you know, to get to all the different corners of the world than just running a race, or, you know, running a marathon on every continent.
Wow. Now, have you done all seven at this point?
Yeah. So finished in December 2017.
What was it like to, you know, run, I'm sure, what was your favorite one? Which was the most challenging? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. My favorite race, I did an 80K in Chile and Patagonia, and I did it with one of my best friends from college, Joe. So we went down to Patagonia for a few weeks and did like lots of great backpacking, and just had, you know, it's nice when you do ultras that are kind of like point to point, you're not running laps. So it was just like 80K starting somewhere and ending somewhere different, through, you know, over mountains and through glacier fields, just like some of the most like beautiful terrain I've ever had. To be able to experience that and do it with a friend was just really incredible. The most difficult one, hands down, was so Asia was my last continent, and I decided to do the Everest Marathon in Nepal. So it starts, you spend a few weeks trekking around in the Himalaya just to acclimatize and get used to it. And then you start just below Everest Base Camp and you run down to Namche Bazaar. So, you know, your starting point, you know, it's just, you know, between 16,000, 70,000 feet. So, you know, you're pretty high up. And I actually just got quite ill during the race. I cope well with altitude, and I have in the past. You're camping in quite close quarters with people, you know, for weeks and weeks. And there'd been a virus that was going around, you know, kind of the week leading up to the race. And I was like almost just trying to quarantine myself, because especially just being kind of the last continent and being so close to finishing this goal and, you know, going through all this effort to even start the race, just wanted to make sure that I'd be healthy. And so, you know, hold myself up in my tent at night. And so, you know, really was incredibly careful. And I just got hit with this stomach bug about 13 miles into the race, and just kind of, you know, I started vomiting, diarrhea, just like the whole bit, just kind of like worst case scenario. And it wasn't, you know, like a road marathon where you're like, all right, well, it's, you know, it's only 13 more miles, you know, you just get through it. It was, you know, 13 more miles like at altitude in the Himalaya, and it was cold. And, you know, it's about like at the start of the race, it was -2, -3 Fahrenheit. And but you're running, you feel fine. And then like, as soon as you just have these GI issues, just like kind of stop running for a bit. And, you know, then you start to get cold, and, you know, you have to, you know, change your caloric intake when you're at altitude. So you burn calories different. You need to make sure you're hydrating more. And I just wasn't able to put, you know, anything, couldn't stomach anything down. But kind of just kept pushing on, because you only had one way to go anyway. Like, you had to get to the finish line. So whether it was by your own power or someone picking you up. So I just kind of kept going. And then I remember rounding this corner and looking back up, because you're running down. You know, I think there's maybe like 10,000 feet of elevation gain through the race, but you were net going downhill and you were running away from Everest. And I remember turning around and like seeing Mount Everest and looking at it and like thinking about how beautiful it was. And I stopped to look at it. And I remember like, all right, getting cold, like I kind of keep going. And I saw like these clouds kind of coming across the, around the top of Everest, and kind of like these black, really dark clouds. And then I was like, oh yeah, I definitely got to keep moving. And then when I turned around, those dark spots were still there. And I was just losing my vision. So, you know, kind of going along at this point, and I think there was another maybe 3 miles away. And by the time I got to that checkpoint, I couldn't see anything out of my right eye. I just had tunnel vision in my left eye. And just have like this stupid mentality of like, you know, I just, you know, there were 6 miles left in the race. I'm like, I just have to, you know, stick it out and finish it. Which was retrospectively just a really stupid decision. You know, it could have been really, got to be 23 miles and was just starting to hallucinate and just seeing, you know, bushes move across the trail, and the path was, you know, waving back and forth. And I just decided like in my head that the most important thing I had to do in that moment was like, I had to take a shit. So I reached over into this bush and just fell, because there wasn't a bush there. And then like kind of got my running tights off, did my business, and then went to get back up and just fell down. And I stayed there for like 20, 25 minutes. And, you know, finally just like kind of just really just trying to keep my brain active, like telling myself what I had to do, telling myself that I need to get up and that I needed to keep going. And I kind of got myself out and just was just stumbling along. And there were these four Irish guys that had entered the race together. And I had done most of my trekking with them the past 3 weeks. And we became pretty good pals. And, you know, there were three of them running together at this point. And they kind of came across me, and one of the guys, Tom Power, he said, you know, Bobby, he's like, you know, stop messing around, because you just saw me kind of all wobbling all over the trail. And then he got closer to realize that I just wasn't in a good way at all. He said, you know, wait here, because at this point, so you run 20 miles down Namche Bazaar, and then it's a 10K loop. I'm back, so you're 3.1 miles out, 3.1 back. And they're like, we're going to run out to the kind of the checkpoint, because I was on my way back in, and then we'll pick you up and we'll help you in. So I was just kind of walking, and then the three of those guys got me in like the last kilometer and a half or so, last 2K, and really just like in their like arm in arm, just kind of them dragging me along and getting me to the finish line. And you know, it comes back to this thing of expectations, where, you know, when I thought about what it would be like to finish these seven continents, you know, after this, you know, two and a half, three year journey of traveling around the world and running all these races and kind of climaxing it, this moment in the Himalaya of, you know, really finishing it, putting a bookend on it. Instead, it was, you know, being on the shoulders of these people that, you know, I had just known for a month. But it was quite fitting because, you know, when I totaled up when I was writing the book, you know, between all the races, the seven races for the continents, it was, you know, something like 44 hours of running, which occurred over, you know, cumulatively a year outside of the United States, traveling around the world. And that, you know, running was kind of the vessel that got me there, but it was more about, you know, these people that I met and these life lessons that I learned that, you know, would have never happened if I didn't decide to just start traveling and see the world.
That had to be amazing. And then talk about, you know, your book's a lot about, you know, the healing through that. How did this help you heal or surviving the Boston tragedy? I think we're having a little bit of technical difficulty. Bobby's in the mountains of Scotland or the highlands of Scotland with limited cell phone service. But Bobby, tell us a little bit about, if you're there, about, you know, the healing aspect of this. I think, you know, that was one of the biggest things you did, was to set out to do these seven marathons to help, you know, cope with and heal from dealing with the Boston tragedy. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, when, you know, I was talking a bit earlier about how you have kind of this defeated feeling when, you know, if you struggle with mental health issues and then you make the decision to seek counseling and that doesn't work. You know, for some people that is the end of the line. And, you know, my experience working in emergency medicine, that is, you know, unfortunately what sometimes happens is people just give up, you know, to the point, you know, sadly of suicide. And it's something that affects so many people's lives, so many more that you would even know, or if there's people, you know, there's a stigma about it and people don't talk about it, which is something that, you know, I hope to change with my book. But, you know, when counseling didn't work, I found healing in nature, and I found healing in traveling the world and running these races. And it doesn't have to be that. It could be anything that you will give you fulfillment in your life that, you know, and it's not a distraction. It's just, it's a way to cope and it's a way to deal with it. To it's healthy for your brain to be in these places that really stimulate your senses to something that, you know, you haven't experienced before. And for me, it really was, you know, it's just such a cliche thing, but now, like, the world was open to me. I realized that I could go these places and I could go on my own and I could travel. And just felt so fortunate to find it. Just through running. And, you know, over the course of running these seven races, you know, my total running time was, you know, I think it was just over 44 hours. But cumulatively, over that traveling time, it was just over a year of being outside the United States. And, you know, I realized, you know, it's such an interesting thing that, like, how little of this path to healing was about the running. It was about, you know, running was the vessel that got me out into the world and allowed me to see all of these things and meet these people and learn things that I would have never realized if I hadn't made this change. And if the Boston Marathon bombing didn't happen, you know, I wouldn't have done any of that.
Wow, that's amazing. No, and being in nature, like you said, and being out and the physical side of it really can be refreshing. I think there's not too many times you go out for a run. You can go out for a run being mad, but not very often do you come back still being mad, right? It yeah, sort absolutely. Of has a way to, you know, cleanse your mind and cleanse everything else.
Absolutely. You always feel good after a run.
Exactly. Now, I've never heard anyone say, I wish I didn't do that workout.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we're up here on a half hour. Tell me, you know, tell us where people can find can find Bobby O'Donnell, can find your book, for if more people want to reach out to you or, you know, have any questions.
Yeah. If you go on www.runningwildbook.com, there's a link to buy the book. It's on Amazon. It's at a lot of the, it's in store at a lot of the Barnes and Nobles in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. I'll be back from Scotland at the start of April, be doing a few book signings, one April 5th at Shoveltown Brewery in Northeastern Massachusetts. It's at 3 o'clock, and then April 6th at Pemmy Public House in North Woodstock, and that's at 5 o'clock, and then at St. Anselm College on April 7th at 4 p.m. So I'll be back for that week, and then going off to hike the Pacific Crest Trail this summer, and we'll be back in August to do some Barnes & Noble book signings.
Perfect. No, and I'll put everything here as well, and links to your book so people can check it out. But Bobby, this is awesome. Great little, you know, great journey that you've been on. I'm sure the journey is still going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Every day, but it's a good one.
And if anyone has any questions, comments, concerns, feedback, feel free to reach out to me at kenandtheexecutiveathletes.com. But make sure you keep on listening and go out there and crush it this week. Everyone have a great weekend. Bye. All right, we're good to go.